Once past the humans, the spider dashed for the precious web. Crackling loudly, the flames were commencing to burn through the lower cable, the silky ropes above charring badly. In frantic haste, the spider crawled onto the web, snipping lengths free with its mandibles. In only a few moments, a ragged patch of smoking material fell to the ground, and promptly burst into flames, the silk sending off greenish smoke. Now, angling its head, the arachnid keened again in a lower tone, and crawled off the web to charge toward the departing intruders.
Move, people!
Ryan twisted the grip on the handlebars to the last stop, and the Harley lurched forward. As the rest hit the gas, gray smoke poured from under the spinning rear tires until they caught, and then the machines shot forward. But the spider was only 50 yards behind and closing fast. The Harleys were slowly building speed, but so was the spider. Shifting to the highest gear, JB pulled the Gren and used his teeth to peel off the safety tape. Grabbing the pin with his other hand, the armorer yanked it loose and tossed the HE charge at the oncoming creature.
Shotgun them! No groupings!
A rain of Grens arched over the companions to hit the concrete road and bounced toward the spider. Moving with incredible agility, the mutie dodged the pattern of spheres and was past the first Gren when it detonated. Zigzagging, the spider nimbly maneuvered past the Grens, the rest exploding in ragged order, throwing out great clouds of black smoke to mix with the burning silk's green fumes. The friends fired a flurry of rounds at them as it snapped its mandibles at the rear bike carrying Jack and Doc. The Lama boomed twice, but the 44 mini-balls did no visible damage to the creature.
Damn it on the hill!
Ryan pulled out a Gren and started to slow, attempting to reach a position where he could drop the Gren and ace the mutie, but not Jack and Doc. As it tried again, Doc fired the Lama steadily until realizing that the creature was dropping farther behind with each passing second.
The Leviathan eluded!
Sliding back into formation, the warriors reduced their speed and put a couple more miles under their tires before they stopped watching for the mutie.
Need an armored tank to chill that thing. Something that size would toss an APC around like a kitten.
If it caught the APC.
Armored personnel carriers aren't famous for their speed or durability. The best would be an Apache gunship with heat-seeking Sidewinder missiles.
Any chance we might find one of those at the armory?
Could be a lot of choppers there, but that's not a wag you can operate by guessing, like a tank or PT boat.
On the horizon, the southerly volcano belched forth a tremendous black cloud of ash, laced with geysers of white steam. A minute later, the roadway trembled, and the companions fought to control their shaking bikes.
By Godfrey, I think an eruption is imminent. Mayhap we should take the next exit ramp and abandon this expedition.
Relax, baby. That was just a pressure quake. The volcano's just balancing itself.
No danger, Mildred?
Not until the lava arrives. And then it's too bastard late.
The bypass continued for a couple more miles, then started to bank inland toward a wide highway. Only the pillars that supported the ancient skyway still stood, topped with wild twists of iron rods and broken ends of steel girders. The beltway that once encircled the metropolis was gone, reduced to piles of rubble on the ground. Ryan gave a sharp whistle as he rolled along the side of the road, craning his neck to look at the buildings and stores below. There were plenty of signs along the berm, but the wind and weather had reduced them to blank steel rectangles, carrying no more information than a dead man's eyes.
Military wags over there!
Set in a small park near a dried lake was a stout granite building with a curved roof and a massive concrete wall. A garage stood with its door swung up, a collection of assorted civilian vehicles in the parking lot. An iron spike fence topped the massive wall, and the only entrance in sight was closed with a steel gate and a large guard kiosk. But only half of the enclosed area was present. The mesa edge cut the rest of the location in two, the leafy tops of trees visible over the rim of the cliff. The thick jungle stretched for miles to the base of the live volcano.
That's gotta be it.
Half of it's gone. All this way for nothing.
Might as well see what we can salvage. Even an old 60mm recoilless rifle would give us enough punch to remove the spider and the droids.
Taking the ramp, the companions braked to a halt and were forced to walk their bikes onto the sloped grass to get past a bad crash. Several cars had plowed into a military half-track embedded into a bus full of tourists. The grinning skeletons in swimsuits had been brutally crushed under the military wag's tonnage.
Tourists heading for the beach. Poor bastards.
Hell of a crash. Good thing they were chilled already.
What was that? Well, Yes, they would have to be, from the neutron wave. First they died, then they crashed.
Unless they knew the war was coming before anybody else.
Not possible.
Verily, not a soul knew the sword of Damocles was falling, except for the fools who cut the string themselves.
That section of the mesa had been hit hard by the concussion from the neutron bomb's aerial blast. Most of the structures were smashed flat, the overpass lying on the ground in jumbled piles of broken concrete and rust-eaten steel girders. A battered gas station sign swung over a blackened pit that reached for half a block. At the bottom, rats splashed in a rain pool, eating something vaguely cat-shaped. Wrecked vehicles were scattered everywhere, crashed into trees, through store windows, and piled into mounds of corroding metal.
They set off the neutron bomb down here to chill everybody on the island, but to not damage anything downtown.
Maybe there's a gateway there. Not exactly good news.
Why not?
If there's a gateway downtown, then why did the Whitecoats travel 100 miles to a different island to build another gateway and jump from there? Why not use the device here?
Because they couldn't. That's the only possible answer. We just have to figure out why they couldn't, and then fix the problem.
If we don't?
Have to.
Broken glass sparkled on top of the twisted car wrecks, and nobody spoke as they carefully walked the motorcycles down the debris-filled ramp. Ryan, Christy, and Doc each caught their long coats on sharp metal, and finally removed the garments to stuff them inside saddlebags. The day was warm, and there seemed little chance of acid rain. Reaching the ground, they uneasily surveyed the area. Potholes dominated the paved streets, weeds lined the cracked sidewalks, and not a window was intact. Wind-blown leaves piled high inside the stores and homes. In ancient days, this had been a nice section of town, but the residual rads from the nuked Navy base and the concussion of the bomb had changed that. Clusters of tiny red eyes watched them pass by from the sewer drains, and fat crows sitting on a sagging roof shared something bloody and stretchy. Suddenly, a humanoid figure moved past a broken window. Ryan only caught a glimpse of prehensile fangs and clawed hands before it was gone.
We got company. In the ruins. 1 o'clock.
Droids. The damn things followed us.
That was no machine. Something else.
Stickies?
Mildred dumped the spent rounds from her ZKR revolver and quickly thumbed in fresh ones. This was the first chance she'd had to reload since the spider. The physician had tried doing it on the moving bike and stopped after dropping a live round.
Not unless this breed has a mouth and fangs. It more resembled one of the people.
Shitfire. Those blasted blood drinkers are tough to chill.
Iron bars and stone walls do not a prison make, but suffice they shall for a repository of destruction.
Let's get our butts in the armory.
Jack, Dean, you're on point.
Cool.
Ryan started across the street for the pre-dark fortification. As the only companions without bikes to push, the teenager and boy were the best choices for the job. Showing barely a trace of a limp, Jack moved to the left with both his blasters drawn. Dean went to the right, the Weatherby rifle appearing huge in his young hands. As the group moved along the bumpy sidewalk, shadowy figures shifted positions in the decaying house. But none rushed the norms. Ryan hoped the muties knew what blasters could do, and were too afraid to risk an attack. Dangerously low on ammo, the companions couldn't afford even a brief firefight. If the National Guard armory was empty, he had no idea what they could do next. Returning to the Pirateville to steal weapons would be madness. This was their best, perhaps their only chance. There were too many potholes to safely ride the bikes, so they turned the machines off to save fuel and walked the vehicles through the maze of depressions, always keeping one hand on the handlebars and the other filled with a blaster. Reaching the front gate, the companion stood guard while JB checked the lock. A plump rat scurried along the top of the wall. But they withheld from chilling the rodent. Dean threw a stone and missed, but the animal ran away in fright.
Well, we're not getting in this way. This kind of lock can't be forced. We got to blow it.
Thought so, but it was worth a try.
I could climb over the gate and pull the lever in the kiosk, easy.
Gate's electric, not mechanical. Without power, it still wouldn't open.
We could all climb over.
Too risky. We're gonna need the bikes to carry ammo.
Then blow the damned lock.
Plasmic make loud noise. Gonna attract stuff.
We could wreck the ruins. Find some mattress to muffle the sound.
Nobody goes in those houses. I'd rather ask a baron for mercy. Besides, the muties already know we're here.
JB rummaged in his munitions bag. He extracted some C4 and molded the clay-like charge into a small wad the size of a walnut. He stabbed a timing pencil into the plastique and broke it off in the middle.
10 seconds.
Quickly, the companions retreated.